It's been 2 weeks since the Oakland School Board set off a national debate when it declared that the speech patterns of inner-city African-American children were a separate language called Ebonics. The school board had traced the poor performance of many of its African-American students to how they spoke and believed that by recognizing their form of English as distinct, the teachers could help the students do better. Our linguist Jeff Nunberg takes a look at the school board's decision and how the issue played out in the media.
In all the media coverage of the Oakland School Board's Ebonics declaration, the one image that stays with me is a short sequence that ran on Nightline by way of introduction to their discussion of the issue. It showed a young teacher working with a bunch of 9 or 10-year-old black kids. Okay, she said, she be going to high school. Is that standard English or Ebonics? That's Ebonics, one girl said. And how do you say that in standard English, the teacher asked. And the girl answered, she is going to high school. It all seemed perfectly reasonable. Teach kids to think of the transition from the vernacular to the standard language as a kind of translation exercise. And in fact, the approach is neither new nor particularly experimental, and if all the results aren't in yet, it's still hardly the sort of thing to touch off a national controversy. Where the Oakland School Board blundered, of course, was in declaring that the variety that black youngsters speak is a distinct language, and in coupling that with some muddled talk about how the language is genetically based, a phrase that feeds all the stereotypes of Afrocentric excess. And the board made matters worse when they described black speech with that unfortunate term Ebonics, which sounds more like the name you'd give a sneaker or an exercise video. That was all the press needed to cast the story in the familiar template of latest PC outrage. The headline writers seemed to go out of their way to suggest that the Oakland School Board was really saying that black kids didn't have to learn standard English at all. The San Francisco Chronicle headed their story, Oakland Schools OK Black English, and other papers struck the same note, Oakland Schools Sanction Ebonics, Black English Recognized for Schools, and so on. Under that misinterpretation, of course, the program was easy game, and the press had no trouble finding African-American parents and leaders who indignantly insisted that kids had to learn standard English to get on in the world, as if there were legions of radicals in Oakland who were insisting that they didn't. And when it came to describing the speech, critics could barely contain their revulsion. A New York Times editorial dismissed it as inner-city slang, though allowing that it might be colorful in its place. One editorial writer called it a mutant language. A Chicago Tribune columnist described it as this appalling English dialect. The Washington Post columnist William Raspberry said it was a language with no discernible rules. You can say pretty much what you please, as long as you're careful to throw in a lot of B's and leave off final consonants. And there were the inevitable Amos and Andy-style burlesques. A column by Walter Williams in the Boston Globe was headed, Ebonics Ain't Proper Answer, and began, Y'all might be axin' me why I be writin' this way. Actually, that last sentence is revealing, because it's typical of the way critics usually get the dialect wrong. As my Stanford colleague John Rickford pointed out to me, that form be is only used to describe a habitual activity, as in, I be writing a column for the Boston Globe every week. If you're talking about a particular event, the way the Globe columnist was, you should say, I'm writing this column right now, just as you would in standard English. Whatever the critics may think, black English does have systematic rules, some of which go back to its formation in the slave holdings of West Africa and the Caribbean. And in fact, that trait of using a special form for habitual actions is one of the features that some linguists have traced to the West African languages that the slaves spoke. Let me hasten to add that it's going much too far to say that this variety has a distinct origin from standard English. For that matter, most experts are reluctant to call it a separate language at all. The system shares too much in common with the other English dialects. But linguists point out, too, that there's really no way to make that distinction on purely linguistic grounds. It's sort of like trying to decide whether hardball and softball are different games. Ultimately, these are political questions. Bear in mind that it wasn't until 50 or 75 years after the American Revolution that most Americans and British were willing to admit that they still had a language in common, and you can still find people who find even that debatable. In any event, I suspect that what was really outrageous to the critics was not the idea that black kids speak a different language as the implication that they have any language at all. It's just hard to believe that those multiple negations and shorn syllables could be anything other than mistakes, broken English, the bearer of broken thoughts. And I have to tell you that I hear a voice in my mind saying the same thing when I hear Black English spoken. I know it well. It's the voice Mrs. Boyle used when she was drumming the rules of correctness into my head back in the seventh grade when I was making the much easier transition from middle-class speech to the standard written language. It was a stern tune she sang to, Mrs. Boyle, and it makes other music hard to hear.
Linguist Jeff Nunberg is editor of a new collection of essays called The Future of the Book.